welcome to a festive edition of the IWA podcast. Joining me to review the year is Julia McWatt, Media and Comms Officer at the Welsh NHS Confed, Owen Hathaway, Policy Officer at NUT Cymru, and Darren Hill, MD of Positive. So, reflections on a rather busy year, 2016. Darren, has it been a good one for you?
I wrote a piece for your Click on Wales site this time last year, which called 2015 the year of surprises. And frankly, I think I wrote it a year too early, because the things I was pointing to that were surprising last year have absolutely paled into insignificance when you look at the events in every part of the political sphere, from Wales right the way through internationally in 2016. You really didn't know what was coming next. And I think there was a point earlier in the year when I woke up to a headline on Radio 4 that David Cameron had allegedly been caught in doing his student days doing something unsavoury with a dead pig. And that feeling never really left me all year. It was sort of a repeat of that sort of shocking type of revelation, it seemed to be, for 6 months. And I'm just shell-shocked, flabbergasted and very tired.
I think that sums up, isn't it? Cameron and the dead pig is a bygone era now. No one even thinks about it. That in alone would have brought down prime ministers in the past, but that's just something that happened at some point during 2016 now.
Julia, what's been the biggest surprise this year? If we're talking about the year of surprises, what's been the biggest surprise for you?
That's quite a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, so much has happened. I think it's been a long year, and I was just saying before that, you know, you think about the assembly elections happened this year. I actually had to check that because it seems like such a long time ago. I mean, I guess it's probably a toss-up between the Brexit result and the Trump result. I think waking up sort of in the early hours of both those mornings being quite surprised about both those results. Others may argue that they were predictable, but I think for me personally, I was quite surprised by both of those.
Do you think Brexit was the kind of seminal moment of 2016 for you, Darren?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably one of the most important events in British political history, as significant as going into the European Union in the first place. I did see it coming, I must say, and I've been warning about the possibility of it happening for several years, and I think a lot of the political establishment were incredibly complacent over a long period of time. But having said all that, I think the other surprise to me was actually the assembly election result, where nobody predicted Labour just going down by one seat. And that was, sometimes no change is a shock as well. It's just been a series of challenges month on month, really, to get your head around.
Of course, the biggest change in the Assembly elections was really the rise of UKIP, so going from no members to 7 AMs. How do you think that in the last few months has really changed the makeup of the Assembly?
I think it's certainly changed the tone of the Assembly. If you watch FMQs now, they're a lot more adversarial than they have been before this Assembly term. And to an extent, I think that's quite a good thing. I think there was far too much sort of consensus and complacency during those sessions. So whilst I don't particularly subscribe to sort of rhetoric that Neil Hamilton has brought to the Assembly, I think his challenge to the First Minister's questions, challenge to the norm, has brought out even better from Andrew Arty Davis and Leanne Wood as well, and even Calvin Jones. I think people have become tired of that sort of just stalemate answer that we've had in the past, and it's forcing him to up his game. So they've been a good introduction, whilst I personally wouldn't have wanted to see a raft of UKIP policies and Assembly members brought in. And then they've been a good introduction to have shaken it up. The big challenge for them as a party now is, having achieved their raison d'etre, where do they actually go? They do seem to be coming apart at the seams on a UK level, and the very fact that they had a change of leader within weeks of being at the Assembly says that they're not the most stable of parties in the Welsh context as well. So they are going to be actually a really interesting one to watch how they develop over the next 4 years and going into the next Assembly election. But it's radically changed the sort of narrative of devolution, even, not just politics of it.
How do you think the Assembly, what do you think the big surprises will be coming forward from the Assembly?
That's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, we had a lot of surprises with the election, and then there's been sort of various headlines between parties falling out so far. And then it sort of calmed down more recently.
We've obviously had kind of two independents coming in. So we had obviously Nathan Gill leaving UKIP and sitting as an independent member in the Assembly, and then Devon Alice Thomas leaving Plaid. And that those are kind of the big shocks that have come through in the last couple of months.
Yeah, I think it's particularly around David Ellis Thomas, what he decides to do. I mean, there's rumours whether he's going to go be offered a cabinet position. So I think that's one to watch. I think, you know, it's what sort of happens with some of the promises that Labour have made around the election. I mean, for the NHS's point of view, we've got a parliamentary review that needs to be looked at. So we need to look at where that's going and where they deliver on those key pledges, and also how Brexit plays out for Wales as well.
I think looking back at 2016, actually, one of the real interesting ones was the First Minister vote with Caroline and Leanne. I think had it not been for how ridiculous 2016 has been generally, we'd still be talking about that now. It's clearly and easily the most dramatic moment of the Assembly, as far as I've been watching, for numbers of years. It was really, you know, if Kirsty Williams had gone the other way, we'd have a different First Minister right now. And we can't underestimate how actually radical that is. But because of 2016 has been the year it has been, it's just been forgotten about. But that was a really dramatic moment, and I think it shows that even though Labour only lost one seat, they did lose the majority, and I think that's changed the sort of thinking. And obviously we've got a Lib Dem education minister off the back of that, potentially David Hale going into government, albeit I think that would be quite a bizarre move by Labour to do that. But I mean, the sort of international and the UK wide and Brexit have all taken away from the fact that there's been quite a dramatic year in Welsh politics, but it's just fallen by the wayside in comparison.
Well, let's be honest about it as well. For the last few years, the Assembly has been deeply tedious in plenary. Nothing surprising ever seemed to happen. But we actually had two really surprising moments this year, because the other one was the loss of the Public Health Bill, which again, people seem to have forgotten about. But that whole fracas, that bust up on the very last day that the Assembly was sitting with perhaps, you know, words that Leighton Andrews won't want ascribed on his tombstone, you know, but it, for that particular moment, I think that created a different sort of atmosphere as well. I think you're right, Owen, that vote was significant. It was significant not just because it was surprising, but it was significant because it set a tone. And the harder language, the more confrontational approach, isn't just emanating from UKIP, it's coming across the party spectrum, not least from Plaid. I think that over the last 6 months, Plaid is a very different beast to the party in previous years. I think they've got a lot tougher, they're a lot less forgiving of government, and even though they've got this compact with Labour, they're treading quite a clever path between supporting and opposing the government as and when it suits them. There are a lot of cards that they've got in their, good cards they've got in their hand at the moment.
Do you think Labour's position then, as Owen was suggesting, even though they only lost one Assembly member, a lot of the power seems to have shifted in the Assembly, how do you think that's going to play out over the next few years? Because their position's a lot more precarious than it has been, but they do have a hand to play in terms of support from Kirsty Williams, David Hale. There is a bit more wiggle room, potentially?
I think the David Hale move certainly gives them wiggle room. The absence often of one of the UKIP members, or more than one of the UKIP members sometimes, gives them a bit of wiggle room. It isn't quite as oppressive as, and I'm old enough to remember the 2003 to 2007 Assembly. Similar sets of figures, but a real war of attrition on a weekly basis where the government was losing votes. I think they can take, Labour can take significant comfort from David Hale's switch, because it has provided that bit of breathing space, and it's a less oppressive atmosphere for them once that switch happened than it was before.
Given that breathing space, Julia, do you think that the Welsh government should be more ambitious with things like their programme for government, with the legislation they plan to bring forward?
I think we felt that it would have been good to have that bit more ambition. I mean, from our point of view, we've called for a long-term vision for the NHS. We'd still like to see that. I think, you know, we've backed the measures that are in the Public Health Bill that work back originally. Unfortunately, as Darren said, that didn't go through. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be nice to have sort of that more visionary approach in certain areas.
I think I was critical of the Welsh Government when they released the programme of government, because it didn't have any huge targets. There didn't seem to be much to measure it by. I think I actually wrote a piece for Click on that, suggesting that they should have been bolder in their ambition. I suppose to an extent it reflects that sort of safety first approach of any party that's been in government for so long, setting targets that they don't feel is achievable. I wouldn't have been surprised had it been bolder had the First Minister vote not happened. I thought after the election that even though they'd lost a seat, they were in a much stronger position because of the fragmentation of the opposition. Mm-hmm. But I think that really, that First Minister vote really brought home to them that actually they are treading a tightrope. It's not quite as comfortable as they would have thought, or potentially other people would have thought. I'm not suggesting that Labour were being complacent with it. So maybe that's why they haven't had a bold programme for government, but that doesn't mean that they can't have boldness in their delivery and as they bring policies forward. They don't have to stick directly to that programme of government. They just maybe didn't want to write it down to be judged against in years to come.
And with Brexit, obviously, an endless debate, it seems, going on at the moment, and the Supreme Court decision imminent, Wales's role in the Brexit debate is obviously going to become a big thing in the early months of next year. Do you think the Welsh Government are really prepared for that? Do they know what they want? Do they know Wales's position when it comes to the negotiating table? And how will they deliver that?
Well, that's the biggest challenge the Welsh Government's actually facing. I think they were incredibly incoherent in the first few months after Brexit. I think they were jumping all over the place in terms of what they were prioritising. They were shell-shocked. The narrative almost sounded like the type of narrative that Nicola Sturgeon was producing in Scotland. There was almost an assumption that Wales had actually voted to remain. But that narrative did change over time. I think they've wised up. In terms of the leverage that they can have in negotiations, I think it really does remain to be seen. But it's probably nowhere near as high as the Welsh Government likes to pretend it is, but nowhere near as low as the critics of the Welsh Government are alleging it is. It's probably someone in between.
And there is this issue with how divided the electorate seem at the moment. Obviously, the Brexit vote for Wales was to leave the EU, but there was a significant amount of people voting to remain. Do you think the political parties have quite grappled with that split in the electorate at the moment?
I don't think they do. And I think, to be fair, I think Darren is absolutely right that the narrative did come out that almost assuming that Wales voted remain. And then the reality is, it's difficult for you as an individual, if you were Carwyn Jones or Leanne Wood, to change your mindset to represent someone who fundamentally disagrees with you on a policy issue. I think if I was in charge of any political party in Wales, having fundamentally believed that we should remain, despite the fact that the electorate are telling me we should leave, it's hard to completely change your mindset on that. And some credit, albeit obviously it disagrees with my own views, but some credit to Theresa May, who's done that shift in the inverse, in that she's the arch Brexiteer now, despite the fact that she was campaigning for Remain, or, well, subtly campaigning for Remain. So I think that's probably why there was such, for want of a word, confusion in terms of how the Welsh Government responded. I disagree with that in the sense that I do think that the importance of Wales to this whole narrative is as low as the critics would suggest. I think the Welsh Government actually have, in terms of the Supreme Court actions, when we can do, probably put themselves further up that agenda than they would have otherwise.
And Trump Scotland, who were moving in the same direction, well, Wales did it first, you know?
So actually, irrespective of if that legal challenge is the right or wrong thing, politically, I think it probably was the right thing. It actually is now going to force the UK government to take notice of them, whereas they wouldn't have otherwise. But unfortunately, I think that we are a bit part player in this, just by the nature of, A, we voted to leave, and B, the numbers game in terms of the influence of the MPs and the influence of the population.
So we've said this year's full of surprises. What are the real highlights for you? What are the positive things we can take from 2016?
I think the pain and misery that has been witnessed in the political class has been a really positive thing this year. I've really enjoyed people's self-flagellation, denial, seven stages of grief that have played out on social media. It's been an immensely satisfying thing to feed on and watch.
Julia?
Well, we were talking about this just before the podcast, weren't we, trying to think of some highlights, and like I said before, it's been such a long year, it's almost difficult to remember sort of what happened pre-Brexit. I'm struggling to think of many highlights, to be honest.
We were sticking with the Olympics.
I was going to say, we were talking about the Olympics, and there was a lot of Welsh sporting success there, so I'll put that one forward.
I think if I take it down to the personal and professional, I think the relationship we've got with the Welsh Government and Kirsty Williams has been as positive as it's ever been on education since I've been. I think the narrative around, despite the PISA results, I think the narrative around education reforms has been the best it's ever been in terms of cross-party consensus. And I think that started with Hugh Lewis, but certainly Kirsty Williams has taken on. So that's a positive. I mean, the only other positive I can say is that I've always found elections to be really, really dull because the result is already there because political posters are always right. I'll never think that again. So at least I'll have the excitement of an election in future where I won't go into an election assuming that things are right, because twice this year I've gone to bed assuming that an election result is in at sort of 11, 12 o'clock, and twice I've woken up, despite being devastated, to be completely confounded by the results.
You talked about Kirsty Williams there. So despite the huge losses for her party in the Assembly elections, she's come out relatively well out of this. Do you think she's a real winner of 2016?
It's difficult to say that anyone who's led a party into an election and seen their party decimated to the point that they're no longer a group can be a winner. So I'm sure that knowing Kirsty as I do, and I'm not saying I know her particularly well, but I've worked with her over the years, I know that she would have felt that loss deeply, and I'm sure she'll be really upset by what's happened to the Lib Dems despite I would say her best efforts, because certainly it's not because of Kirsty that they lost those votes and those seats. So I wouldn't say that she's a winner. At the same time, I think her personal mandate is impressed to actually have the return in Brecon and Radisha.
She's got the fifth safest seat in the Assembly.
At a time where the Welsh Lib Dems are completely annihilated, and to have gone into government and to have done it with real authority and to have taken a Lib Dem badge in there. She hasn't just gone there as Kirsty Williams, but Kirsty Williams, the sole Lib Dem. I think that she can certainly, in years to come, look back at it as a successful year on a personal level, but that's going to be a difficult one to marry up with the result for the party.
I saw her speak at an event last week. It was on higher education, and it was the day after the PISA results had come out. And she was talking about how she thought that Diamond and these HE reforms would be the biggest challenge, but actually it looks like it's PISA. And it got me thinking that actually one of those big tuition fee debates that we thought were really going to affect her quite harshly in this Assembly, she seems to be managing that quite well so far.
I think this is why I would potentially say that she's a winner, despite what I just said, is that at the end of 2016, Kirsty's stock has probably never been higher. I mean, in and out, because she's had some successful times as well, but certainly her stock hasn't gone down since taking up the position. And if you told me that a Lib Dem taking charge of a tuition fees policy in 2016 was going to come out the other end well respected for how she's managed it, and with the potential and goodwill and support behind her to have potentially a successful 2017 as an education cabinet secretary, I think that in itself is quite an astonishing achievement, really.
Who are your winners and losers of 2016, Julia?
Oh, again, it's a difficult one. If you look at the political sphere, I mean, you know, you could say UKIP were winners. You know, they did very well, as predicted, in the Assembly elections. You know, as Darren said, it's kind of the hard right have probably been the winners of this year. Losers probably be the Liberal left, I suppose, on the other hand. I mean, if we're going sort of beyond politics, like I said, we had some good sporting success in the Olympics. So I think we could at least champion some of that stuff as well, clinging on to that one.
Darren, I wanted to pick up on the Tories, because they look relatively stable at the moment, but things can't be good there. They had a pretty shocking election when they thought they were going to win some seats. They haven't mirrored the success that the UK party had in the general election in 2015. It's going to be a worrying time for them.
It's been a bit of a mixed bag year, really. They did have a bad Assembly election result. I think they were starting to face up to that internally in the weeks that followed that Assembly election result. And had we not voted Brexit, I think there would be moves against Andrew Arty-Davies. But Andrew put his neck on the line when it came to the Brexit vote. And unlike the rest of his colleagues who backed Brexit, he did it vocally and visually, and he was out there. He was as active a member of the Leave campaign as the members of UKIP. And that saved him, because he was in touch with the Welsh public in the way that the majority of politicians in the Assembly were. So I think That changed the narrative. It's enabled Andrew, I think, to put more authority, more stamp, and he's secure at that post for as long as he wants to keep it now. Comparing that to a UK level, I think one of the things that's brought the Conservative Party on a UK level a great deal of comfort has been the disarray of the Labour Party, frankly. They should have been, they should have had a much, much tougher summer than they did post the Brexit decision, and that the they seemed to be heading for oblivion at the time when they were having their leadership election, then suddenly it all disappeared and everybody united behind one candidate. And that's the real beauty of the Conservative Party, their ability to pull themselves back from the brink, to remodel and to display some terrific unity. It's something to behold. I've seen it several times in my lifetime, and every time I see it, I just sit there open mouthed. It's a work of genius.
And your winners and losers?
I think Andrew's probably my winner, just from the basis that he climbed back from the, or walked back from the edge of the precipice. Credit to Leanne as well. I don't think it was a great result for Plaid Cymru in the Assembly election. They didn't make a huge amount of progress, but Leanne did what she set out to do. She unseated a prominent Labour member in a Heartland Valley seat, and that's the first time the Plaid has won a Heartland Valley seat in that particular part of Wales since the first Assembly election. So I think that that no doubt has strengthened her hand and has delivered for her, if not the party as a whole, a very credible result this year.
Obviously, one of the first challenges up next year is the local government elections. Do we think that there'll be a real test of how the political parties have played since Brexit?
I never, ever view local party elections as some sort of referendum on party politics. People vote for Glyn the Butcher, not Glyn the Butcher, the Plaid Cymru or Tory candidate. That said, I do think they may very well, because Labour are coming from a higher position as well, reflect the disarray in the UK Labour Party, and that's where people get generally get their news from. So Labour could be struggling as a result of that. No fault of their own, actually, in Wales, but they certainly could take a lot of losses from it. And a rejuvenated Lib Dem party filling the gap where Labour should be filling right now, and they've always done well at local government level, could actually have a really good result off the back of that. But party politics, when it comes to local government, is a really difficult circle of square, I think.
UKIP's got to be eyeing up some council seats.
Probably, but their machine in terms of delivering votes in very precise areas isn't fantastic. Let's not forget, they're still a party in a lot of financial and structural problems. That's not to say that they won't make some gains, but I don't imagine them to be anywhere near as sweeping as they did in the Assembly elections. It'd probably be a little bit closer to the general election, to be honest, where they just make a couple of, maybe one or two little breakthroughs, but nothing more spectacular than that. The local elections are going to be interesting, partly because Labour was on such a high watermark at the last local government election. So, you know, is there any point having a political bet anymore, because nothing ever it ever works out the way anyone predicts? But I would suggest that the only way is down for Labour when it comes to the local elections in May. Down by how much, I won't be drawn on, but there we are. I've said it and I'm bound to be wrong.
And since the general election across the UK, we've seen some Lib Dem gains in council seats. Do you think that that might be likely across Wales?
I think it's difficult when there isn't really a Lib Dem presence in Wales. I think that's going to be really hard for them. And as Owen said, you know, local elections are very much based on who people sort of recognise on their local high street. So I think it would be nice to see that, but I'm not confident that will happen.
If it happens, it'll happen in the urban centres where they've previously established themselves as an urban alternative. I can see them making headway again in bits of Cardiff. I can see them making headway again in bits of Swansea and Newport and Wrexham, but probably not a lot outside that.
And Darren, if you thought that 2015 was the year of surprises and 2016 actually turned out to be so, what have we got to expect from 2017?
Well, I hope 2017 will be the year that people stop being so complacent when it comes to connecting with the electorate, and stop pretending to listen and just nodding, but actually do genuinely engage and listen to what the electorate is trying to tell them when they get given the opportunity to do so.
Great.
I think with Trump taking office, all I want from 2017 is that I see 2018, or at least some semblance of civilization since 2017, but that's my hopelessness of this year seeping through into next, I think.
Well, on that positive note, we'll draw to a close. Thank you very much, all. See us again in 2017 for the next IWA podcast.